sports are really important vehicles for relationships.
We have purpose. We have a why. We bring people together. We connect.
I feel like God is our greatest supporter and our greatest coach.
Welcome to Rabbi on the Sidelines. This is Rabbi Erez Sherman from Sinai Temple in Los Angeles. It is March Madness, but today we're not going to talk about basketball. We'll talk a little about football, but of course we're going to talk about the intersection of sports and faith, not about the box scores or the trade deadlines, but what's in our heart and soul. This episode, we are joined by a very special guest that I just got to meet just a couple of months ago, and we'll share that story together. It's Kevin Jordan, Director of Player Development at UCLA Football, also a sports chaplain. UCLA also was of the Pittsburgh Steelers, 1994 All-American NCAA of UCLA, single season record of 1,228 yards. Kevin Jordan, it's great to have you. Thanks for joining. How are you?
Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
So I know there's so many more accolades than just that single season record. I know there were 73 receptions and lots of different numbers, but we're going to talk more spiritual numbers today. But let's first talk about, I like to say, the mundane, as we say in our tradition, from the ordinary to the sacred. The ordinary is sports. That's what brings people together. But then we get to the sacred. The ordinary piece, you love sports. You grew up in Maryland and you make your way out to UCLA. Take us through that just journey through sports, that entry into sports, and what it did for you as a child.
Well, first of all, I grew up in a home of with three boys, and I'm the middle. So I think part of it was just having an older brother to follow in his footsteps and just going outside, hanging out with the other kids around the neighborhood. And we always kind of played sports and those kind of things. And so for me, I've always been grew up around sports and just kind of a way to kind of keep us busy. And so for me, being able to be active and get involved in Boys and Girls Club, that was something that was very, just a natural thing for us to do growing up. And so being able to, see that I had some athleticism and that perhaps it could take me somewhere was something that was very much on my mind, but just something that I knew would have to be in God's timing.
And so you said it was on your mind, but at what moment does an athlete like you realize that you can make that jump from either Pop Warner football, Little League baseball, CYO basketball, to a moment all the way across the country? What was that recruitment like from UCLA? How did you choose to come out west? That's very far back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, especially too, growing up in the age where there wasn't like social media and things right. like that. I think for us growing up, the thought of a scholarship was not something that was on our front of our minds at all. I mean, it wasn't very many, kids around the neighborhood who, as far as I remember, had opportunities to go to college on a scholarship. And so for me, it was just about just doing something that was fun and being active. And parents put us in the, Boys and Girls Club. And so we sports was something that we did year long. And I think it really wasn't until my older brother was getting opportunities to go to college on a scholarship. He was a track and field guy, football as well. And I think when he got the opportunity, he's a few years older than me, that's when the light bulb went off in my mind, thinking that, you know what, this is something that could be possible for me. And that's really where the vision started. And so for me, it's just like once I got to the closer I got to that next stage, that's when I started to think that, this is something that is a realistic possibility for me because I was able to kind of see, him go through that process myself.
And why not Maryland? Why not Boston College? Why make the way out west? What was the draw besides the amazing sunshine that we see today?
Yeah, my brother decided to come to UCLA. I came out a couple years later. And I grew up right down the street from University of Maryland's campus. And so we went to Maryland University all the time just because, it was close by and we got a chance to see some sports and things like that. So I just felt like it was too close to home for one. And I had a lot of opportunities coming out of high school to go different parts of the country. But I told myself that I wasn't going to UCLA. I wanted to blaze my own trail. But I did want to see what Los Angeles was like. So I was grateful that they eventually started recruiting me. I got a chance to take an official visit out here and my brother hosted me. And then at the end of the day, this was my fourth trip out of the five that you get. And I just knew in my heart that this is a place I wanted to go. I was going to commit to another school. Like a couple of weeks beforehand, my mother was like, wait, Kevin, just wait, you know, just be patient. And I'm so glad I did, because I feel like I did the right thing for sure.
And you're still here.
Yes.
Now take us to that step, especially in football, where often freshmen are redshirt. They take that year off. So often people go from being the star in the high school and then to sort of having, if you wish, take a step back. But then you take a step forward and you become an All-American, which not many people do either. Mm-hmm. What was that light bulb moment that said, oh, my gosh, I can actually be one of the best NCAA football players in this country?
See, for me, ironically, that wasn't my mentality when I came to college. After the fact that I got a scholarship, you know, I figured I was going to get an opportunity to take my athleticism and have an opportunity to go to college and get an education that way. But for me, I was recruited as a wide receiver, and people don't really know this about me, is that I did not have much film at all. I didn't really play the receiver position in high school. I was pretty raw as an athlete. And so I had to be molded into a receiver when I got to UCLA. And so for me, it was just, you know, there's this thing called redshirting that I heard about, that I just figured I was going to come in and redshirt. I wasn't in any rush to play. I knew I was going to need some time to develop in general, to develop my body. But then, you know, playing a new position that I was playing, I really had to learn the position from the ground up. And yes, I had athleticism, but the reality is that it does not come natural to me. And I had to work at it, and I had to learn, you know, the hand positioning. I had to learn how to read defenses. I had to learn how to run routes, and just, you know, a lot of those things sounds pretty simple, but mm-hmm. really have a lot of nuances to them. And so for me, my mindset was just on improving my craft. Yes, I wanted to play, but I wasn't in any rush to play. And so when it got time for me to actually start playing, when I was eligible to start playing, I felt like I was ready to hit the ground running.
So let's go backwards to Maryland and growing up with the faith aspect. Was mm-hmm. it a home? There was faith, there was church, there was God, or was that something that came later?
There was a lot of it came much later, but there was a faith component in our family. I mean, in the sense that we went to church maybe twice a year, you know, on the you know, Christmas, Easter kind of thing. We were a religious family. We prayed before we ate. We tried to treat people how we wanted to be treated. You know, I think that was basically the extent of it. You know, I had the Bible in my home, but I tried to read it, but just couldn't understand it. And so I pretty much just put it aside until I got into college, because I just figured, you know, I didn't understand it. I needed somebody to help me explain it, help me to understand it, things like that. So for me growing up, my philosophy was rooted in actually a scriptural verse that I didn't even know was scripture, but treat people how you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of my motto growing up, you know, and the golden rule, I guess it's called. And so faith was something that I definitely was in my heart. I definitely recognized where my blessings came from. I was doing well athletically, and I would always pray and thank God for blessing me with the opportunity to compete, blessing me with the opportunities to win, things like that. So I always had a God consciousness, and just knew that, you know, that God was watching over me, and that he was the one that was responsible for giving me the talent and the opportunities that I eventually had.
I love that term, God consciousness. I think that's really important, because we all have that, but then you have to awaken that and activate that. And when you got to UCLA and are involved with Athletes in Action, which is brings Christian athletes together, was it because of the, I don't want to say challenges at UCLA, but because of, you know, not being at the top, that you needed that faith piece, or where did the faith piece come in college that sort of took you on your faith journey?
You know, looking back, I think it just came when it was needed in my life. You know, I felt like everything in my life at that moment was pretty good in terms of just, you know, academically, socially, athletically. I had an opportunity to get a scholarship to go to school. But I think I hit a point in my life where I realized that there was a part of my journey of faith that was not being pursued. And it just was timing. And certainly I had opportunities to engage in my faith prior to that, but just didn't feel like I was ready to do that. And so when I got involved for years, we always had an optional chapel option for pregame. And I forget exactly at what point I started attending, but once I started attending, I met our team chaplain, who I hadn't met before. He was like an official but unofficial team chaplain that was serving on campus, working with athletes, and provided opportunities for us to grow spiritually. And so for me, being able to be part of that really opened the doors for me to have an environment, a safe environment of other student athletes like myself that can come into a space and explore what faith means and how do we apply that element in our lives and in our sports. And so that's really how I got started with Athletes in Action. This individual was part of that sports ministry. And it was through that's really set me up and started my growth path during my college years.
And when coaches are obviously trying to get the best out of their athletes, right, that's their job. Players are competing for the position just to get on the field. I believe, is that Chaplain Rod Hairston that you're speaking of?
Yes, I am. Yep.
Yeah. So when we speak, and you mentioned him in some interviews and newspaper articles that you were in, what is the role? What does chapel look like? Optional chapel. Who's coming? Why are they coming? Right. Often we see on the TV interviews after, I thank God for scoring that touchdown, but you were never really thanking God for the fumble. Perhaps God's consciousness also is the ability just to be on that field. What does chapel look like? And has chapel changed based on the faith needs when you entered UCLA and the faith needs of a young athlete today in this social media crazed world?
No, that's a great question. All these years that I've been involved, I don't necessarily think it's changed. I think it's an environment that you create that gives people an opportunity to come in to learn more about who God is and how God views them. I think, you know, the motivation for why people come is varied, you know, and I do recognize that it becomes part of the ritual or the routine before games. Hey, this happened to me. I went to chapel and I legitimately wanted to learn, but I also had a good game. So guess what? I'm going to come back and see if that cycle repeats itself. And so for me, it was a genuine desire to want to learn and grow. But at the same time, I did feel like it was part of, you know, the process of you know, hopefully having a better game and whatnot. So the motivation piece nowadays, I get to a point where it's like, you know, I don't even care why they come because I understand that God's going to speak to them and plant seeds and trust that those seeds will grow in their time. But for the most part, it's just a 20-minute, you know, 20 to 30-minute window, an opportunity just to come to sit and listen to God's word being taught. And hopefully you could be able to apply it to your life. You know, obviously I try when I get a chance to speak and, you know, it's not so much about the game, it's about life. And yes, I don't belittle the game, but I also try to look at it from a broader perspective and not just, you know, not just pray to win or, you know, but just really to say, hey, you know, we're grateful for these opportunities, you know, and I'll be able to apply teaching that they can take and apply to their lives.
So Kurt Streeter from the New York Times, a great journalist who writes about religion, society, and sports, he actually wrote an article about the NFL after DeMar Hamlin incident where he almost lost his life. Thankfully, he's doing okay. But he said, I quote, "Sport is not better than any other religion, but it is a form of religion." I agree a lot with that sentiment. We like to go see people. We talk to our friends. We're cheering for the same team. We have faith in the outcome. Would you agree with what Kurt says? Are there similarities and what are the differences that sort of separate the two, but allow them to come together?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that article. That was actually a pretty good idea and thought behind what you just asked, but you know, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, sports is entertainment and sports is something that we are involved in for the fans. It's to entertain us. And you know, obviously sports in our society is huge and it's around our world. It's like a universal language. And so everybody understands, whether that you like it or not, everyone understands the language of sport around the world. And now it has become a religion because people worship. We worship, you know, as the commandments teach us about, you know, not to make idols in the form of anything, You know, we've done that, and sports is one of many idols in our society. Even as good as it is, these are some great things, but we have to be careful and not make them idols in our lives. But yeah, so sports is definitely a form of religion. People worship sports, you know, bet on sports, things like that, and sometimes certainly, you know, even just recently, just seeing just some of the. It gets taken too far, you know, in terms of just the outcome and how seriously people take the outcomes and things like that. But, you know, I just think that, you know, we just have to keep it in its proper perspective and realize that it's entertainment, something that we can enjoy, things like that. But, you know, I don't know if I would characterize it as being something that is, you know, it certainly is not more important than, our faith in God, but I do see how religion can, how sport can be viewed as religion, just because of how much time, effort, money, adoration that goes towards how we look at it.
That's interesting. When I was on a panel a couple months ago with Val Ackerman, who's the commissioner of the Big East,
yes,
and when she was at Virginia, she actually wrote her thesis on sport as the civic religion of America, not the spiritual religion, but the civic. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting dichotomy, but also intersection, that if we can take the perhaps civic aspects that are positive, like you said, I mean, I met you because of the power of sports, which we'll get into in just a minute, and take the good off of there, I think that can actually be a nice intersection. So based on that, knowing that people worship athletes, that they follow teams, that it's often about the wins and losses, do you have maybe an example or two of a player that you saw that through faith, I don't say became a better person, but has more purpose in their life based on bringing that faith into their sports world?
Yeah, I mean, me for sure. You know, obviously, you know, definitely I've been involved in sports ministry for 25 years, and I've had a chance to engage a lot of people's lives, and some a lot closer than others. But for the most part, you know, it's too many to kind of recount. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, I think the reason why I'm here is because of the change in my own personal life. I'm the, you know, the Bible that most people will read. You know, I've heard that before, like, you know, some people won't even pick up a Bible, but they, you know, our lives are what people watch and they see if this is real. And so for me, when I get a chance to speak to any group, whether it's in college or the professional level, I see myself in those individuals and realize that my life was forever changed because of my commitment to follow Christ. And, you know, my college years were spent me growing spiritually, and this lack of knowledge that I had about the Bible, about, you know, the stories in the Bible, things like that when I was in college, became much more known and more relevant in my life. And so I think my motivation down through these years is just to see the change from the inside out that God has made in my life. And so that's why I believe I've been involved in this type of work for so many years, because I've seen it, I've lived it, and I've seen it in other people's lives as well.
So this work took you beyond the Rose Bowl and the UCLA campus, and took you for a couple of years back east to the Pittsburgh Steelers, where Mike Tomlin credits you as forming the spiritual unity of the players on the field in order to win the Super Bowl. Take us to why you decided to make that jump. Was it a calling that brought you to the NFL? And what did you see there at the highest level of NFL, which really the NFL being America's sport, that you learned that you brought back to your ministry here back at UCLA?
Yeah, that was a very interesting time in my life, and something that I do believe was a calling of God in my life. And, you know, it was something that I was not interested in doing in terms of just aspiring to become an NFL chaplain. But, you know, with the ministry I was serving with at the time, Athletes in Action, we had a pro division, and a lot of the coaches in the NFL knew about Athletes in Action, and Athletes in Action can help place chaplains with their teams. And it's just a process, but to try to identify candidates. So for when I got the call, it came at a time where I was least expecting it. and it was the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'm like, wow, what do I know about the Pittsburgh Steelers? You know, I grew up on the East Coast, but not, I knew, you know, about the history, but I knew a few things about the organization that I respected a great deal, and it's family oriented, you know, a lot of respect around that franchise, the Rooney Rule and what that represented for people of color, to try to get opportunities in the NFL. So, and the fact that they've only had three head coaches in the last 30 plus years. So I knew those things going into this opportunity. It was not the easiest decision for my wife and I, but God used it. I look at it a lot like the story of Abraham and his call to sacrifice Isaac.
Wow.
And he had to go all the way, you know, all the way through until God made provision. And in some ways that happened to us where the opportunity was there. I felt like, you know, God was leading me. My wife did too. But then my wife, yeah, she had a change of heart. She was struggling with it. She was dealing with her own stuff. And I think we both had to come to a point where we had to lay it on the altar, the opportunity to go for me, but also the opportunity to stay in California for my wife. And God brought us both to that point individually and realized that we needed to hold our hands open with this opportunity. And as God would have it, he, you know, he got us out there, and a credible opportunity, you know, to be able to be, you know, a humbling opportunity to realize that, you know, out of all the people in the whole wide world, we were chosen, we were selected to serve in this role. And it was an opportunity for me. Like, you know, I had been doing it for 10 years at the college level. The only thing that was different was the fact that these guys have a different color uniform. They have different names on the back, and now they're getting paid. And once I, you know, you get beyond those things. I've been to all kinds of stadiums. I've been to all, I've been around football for so long up to that point. It really wasn't an awe, you know. Yes, you meet some guys that you've seen on TV for the first time, or it's, you know, the big name, that the Ben Roethlisbergers and the Hines Ward and things like that. But once you see them and meet them and connect with them, it's just, they just people, you know. And so the opportunity for us to be back there was a unique calling. And it was more about our family and the growth that God wanted to do in our lives and in our family's life. And the ministry was just what got us out there, the opportunity to serve the Steelers. And it was just the right opportunity that got us to leave L.A. for 4 years. The opportunities and the things that we were able to do was incredible during those 4 years. I wouldn't change it for the world.
And what was it off the field that Mike Tomlin saw that – he said credited them for getting to the Super Bowl? Obviously they have all the talent, you know, you're reading the routes, all the things that you said, but what did you see spiritually in the chapel or even spiritually on the field that you said these guys can really take it to the next level?
Well, you know, obviously Mike T, he's given a lot of credit where it's probably not due for sure with me, but it was, you know, I love being there. I loved Mike Tomlin. I love what the organization stood for. And I think that's why, looking back, it's like this team has always been in the hunt, you know, always been in the playoff hunt. And it really starts at the top. You know, as a player, I had the opportunity to be with three different teams, three different organizations during my NFL stint as a player. And when I came out of college with the Arizona Cardinals, I assumed every team was going to be just like Arizona. And even though we weren't a very good team, the leadership there was very, very good. And so I'm grateful that I got sent there to my rookie year to be around what it looks, some guys that show you what it's like to be a pro. And then I was shipped to Cincinnati in the middle of my rookie year, and I experienced the very opposite. And it was very eye-opener in terms of, all these teams are not, all these organizations are not the same. And then my third training camp was with the Denver Broncos. They had just won the Super Bowl, first Super Bowl with John Elway. And I get there and I'm like, okay, now I see why this team just won the Super Bowl. You could see it and you can feel it. And so when I go to the Steelers and I'm around this organization, the same thing. I can see why they are so perennially at the top. Is because it starts at the top, the leadership, the humility, the respect. There's a faith element, you know, the Rooney family is a strong Catholic family, and they are very humble in how they go about their business, very family oriented, and you can feel that throughout the organization. And during my time there, the leadership in the locker room was very strong, a lot of veteran leaders. And I think those are some of the things that was very evident in terms of how and why this team went to two Super Bowls in the 4 years that we were there, because of the leadership in the locker room. And it really does truly start from the top down. I was just one of the people in there that put my hand in the pile and just try to do my part and just try to encourage these guys in life and just encourage them to keep their faith in God, and no matter what happens in their lives.
Was there a biblical verse or story that sort of became the motto of one of those teams?
No, not really. You know, I just, you know, for me, it was just an opportunity to go in there and to just share, be myself, and to bring God's word to bear in their lives. There was no theme in particularly. It was just more or less, you know, just continue to put your head down and work and just see what happens.
So you mentioned the Isaac and Abraham story in terms of the sacrifice on the altar. I was actually thinking more of Abraham, and in Hebrew it's called Lech Lecha, that God chooses you on a journey and you go to the place that God will show you, leaving your father's home, your land, etc.
Yeah.
But you end up sort of back home, meaning California, where you met your wife, which we're going to talk about her in just a moment. I don't want to tell all the secrets about her, because I do want to have her on the show as well, and her story is truly amazing. Mm-hmm. But I believe what brought you back was not a triumph but a challenge in the UCLA football program with the passing of Nick Pasquale of blessed memory. Why come back at that moment where UCLA was going through a spiritual crisis?
Well, actually, it was before that we had felt called to come back, you know, just like we were called to go out there. And I definitely thought about the Abraham, leave your home, and the Moses, the burning bush. I thought about all those stories as like we were discerning God's call. Is this God, is this you or is this something else? And so we felt like after four seasons there, we committed to three that we wanted to head back on the West Coast where our kids were getting ready to start middle school. We wanted to be planted somewhere for the long haul, and just through prayer and just, you know, just seeing, I was in seminary, I was finishing up, and I thought I was going to go in the pastorate, but just felt like, you know, God had doors open for me to return back on campus. And but after 4 years of being away, there was a whole new group of student athletes, a lot of changes. And so, for me to restart my ministry took a little time, but God was clearly opening up doors for me. And one of the teams that certainly I was connected with was football, but in a different way back then. And so I didn't get a chance to know Nick very well, but I slowly began working alongside the team. And I think that tragedy that happened really opened up the door for me to say, hey, you know, this is who I am. This is what I've been doing. Would love to walk alongside these players as they grieve, as they try to understand life and death matters. And I think that was the beginning of me re-entering into the ministry back at UCLA. It actually started with a women's basketball team, and then it tripled into started working with football and some other teams, things like that. But that's really during that time period, really how things kind of start taking off for me in this second stint at UCLA.
So you mentioned women's basketball. So I need to share the story with their audience about how I met you. It was actually through your wife, but actually through Dan Goldberg, an amazing, amazing man who I served on the board. He's the president of the Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. And I took my kids to the UCLA-USC women's game when they were 2-6 in the country. Go Bruins over Saturday's game, the NCAA tournament. We're excited to watch them hopefully get to Ohio, I believe, Cleveland for the Final Four this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Goldberg said, there is the beach volleyball coach. Her name is Jenny Johnson Jordan. And she not only is an amazing U.S. Olympian, national champion UCLA volleyball player, coach, but she is also the daughter of Rafer Johnson, and then explained to me this unbelievable story of faith that when your father-in-law, Rafer Johnson of blessed memory, lit the torch, the decathlete, Olympic athlete, lit the torch at the LA 1984 Olympics, he wore two symbols of faith, one being a cross and one being the Star of David. I said, I got to hear that story.
Yeah.
And then what I did the research and heard was that he had – He was welcomed by the Jewish community as an African-American on campus at UCLA, specifically entering fraternity life. Maybe just share a little about what it meant to have Rayford Johnson as a father-in-law and have those faith aspects that he brought into his life really passed down the generations to you.
Yeah, I was just telling someone the other day that the story of how it was when we, Jenny and I, first started dating. And when I first saw her, I asked one of our other fellow athletes, who is that? You know, I didn't know her. I hadn't seen her before. And they said, that's Rayford Johnson's daughter. And I'm like, well, who's Rayford Johnson? I didn't know his name. I think, you know, obviously being a few generations younger and living and growing up on the East Coast like I did, I just wasn't familiar with the name. Right. And so, you know, obviously during the times that we dated, obviously 5 years and then we got married, but, you know, I learned, and of course, this is prior to the internet really, and I couldn't really look him up like that, like we can today. But, you know, just being around him and learning about his history, his faith, and just, you know, his relationships that he established through his athletic career and through college, across different racial and religious borders, things like that, was really sweet to see. You know, his personality was pretty laid back, and, you know, he didn't really speak a whole lot when I was around. That may have had something to do with just, you know, me being there and I'm dating his daughter, but no, he was very, very humble. And as far as his faith goes, he really had a quiet faith. I mean, he certainly had a relationship with God, but he was more lived out and versus spoken. And, you know, just hearing the stories and just being in the seeing him interact with people was very inspiring to me. And so when I heard that story myself, you know, I forgot some of the details, but it wasn't surprising to me just because of just the relationships that Rayford had and just, you know, just his heart. And I feel like I'm similar in that regard, and that, you know, just, you know, being a bridge builder. And I think sports does that. You know, you have an opportunity to meet people and connect with people just because of sport. I mean, sport is such a huge, just like I said, it's a universal language. You don't even have to like the sport, but it has the power to draw people together in unique ways. And so I think Rayford having the opportunity to compete around the world, I'm sure he had a lot of opportunities to connect with people from all walks of life and to be an ambassador for a lot of people in terms of how do you cross relationships, cross culturally, and just be human, just be, you know, hey, we all are the same, you know, we all are humans. And so I really admire that about him, being able to see him and how he interacted with people who walked up to him. And he was always so gracious, no matter who they were. And so that was something I always looked up to and wanted to emulate myself in terms of, you know, how do you work with people?
And that went from your sanctuary in Pauley Pavilion to my sanctuary, literally down the street at Sinai Temple. When I heard that story, I invited you and your wife, Coach Jenny Johnson Jordan, and your mother-in-law came as well, which is just really amazing. And it wasn't just a normal Sabbath service, but it was our weekend of MLK, of our Unity Shabbat, put on by Tom and Judy Flesh, amazing members here at Sinai Temple. Maybe share about that experience, what it was like to, we met through sports, yep. But then we are now building that relationship through faith.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, it was just meant to be, obviously, because, you know, Jenny found out about it and then Faithful Central Bible Church was the church we first started going to in college. Yeah. And Pastor Bishop Almer was the senior pastor for years. And then he handed the baton over to Pastor J.P. Foster, who you know very well. Mm-hmm. And we still watch the sermons. We still watch the service, even though we left the church there many, many years ago. And so there was like a you know, this is awesome. Go to something like this. And because of who was going to be there and just what it would represent it. And so the fact that my mother-in-law went was even that much more special, just because where she, you know, she grew up, you know, her sister's Jewish and she grew up in around a lot of Jewish people and friends, things like that. So it was fun. Like when I was my first year I didn't really grow up around a lot of Jewish individuals when I was coming up, just where I grew up. And so when I came out to California, I was exposed to a lot more. And I remember one of our tutors invited me to Easter Seder.
Oh, that Passover. Yeah.
Excuse me. But yeah. And so it was fun for me to be able to take part in that. And that was before my walk with God really started taking off. But I just remember being exposed when I was first in my first few years in UCLA. And so and having become a, having been part of a Jewish family and going to services from time to time because of that, it was just felt like a homecoming. It had been a while since I've been there. And so, you know, I had forgotten about, you know, how you read from right to left. And so, but I enjoyed the time.
Don't worry, if you can read a pass route in the at UCLA playbook, you can definitely read our prayer book.
So it was a great experience just to be a part of that. Again, I love the spirit of the evening and just, you know, this is about humanity and us coming together. And I just loved everything about it. And my mother-in-law was blown away by it. She really enjoyed being there. And so just the opportunity to be a part of that and to have Jenny be able to share, just give a tangible example of how the two worlds connect in our lives, it was just a really special time for us to be a part of that. So
yeah, what was amazing was I was expecting the cross and the Star of David story, and then what Jenny Johnson Jordan pulled out of her pocket was the mezuzah, the little piece of scripture that we put on the wall on each door that her dad had in his pocket basically when he won the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And to especially right now, when a couple of years ago we had the racial divide in Los Angeles and around the country and anti-Semitism growing, that moment of unity was really powerful. And actually that Sunday, just 48 hours later, 50 members of our community went to Faithful Central Bible Church on that Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And we were also blown away. I think more members of us our community are watching J.P. Foster and his sermons now than my own, which is a really good thing as well. As he says, I'm his rabbi and he's my pastor, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yes.
Just to conclude, what does it feel like when you walk on that campus today and knowing, especially in this just really divided world, the need for spirituality? What are the needs today, both in the locker room, on the field, on the court, and just for a college kid in 2024?
Yeah, you just given all the things that you just mentioned about the things that our society's been through, specifically over these last, five years, with the pandemic and the social unrest, things like that. And, obviously we need God more than ever. You know, the times in our society are not getting better. They're not going to get better. That's just what the scriptures teach. And so we really need to continue to proclaim the gospel, to be able to talk about God and to be able to bring God into our lives and things like that. So for me, the times are different. Certainly, but people are still people. The needs are still the same. And we all are broken people. We have sin in our lives. We need a Messiah. We need a Savior. And so it's, we want to be able to be the light that God has called us to be as his children. And so when I am on campus, I see that as my responsibility, as one of God's children, is to be a light and to be able to share his word and his message to the people that who would listen. I had a friend of mine who shared this with me, and it resonates with me about the kind of person that I desire to be. And he talked about having the wisdom of Solomon and the heart of David and the perseverance of Job. And those three characteristics of those individuals in scripture and how God used those individuals in unique ways, just examples of the kind of person that, I want to become. Obviously I'm going to be who God created me to become, but just having those examples that have gone on before us to model what it looks like to follow God, no matter what, and being able to just kind of come out on the other side, just, closer to him. So that's my mission, and what I do is just try to love people, to care for them, show compassion, and to introduce them to God if they don't already know him, to be able to encourage them to stay close to him.
Well, if you weren't a Bruin fan before meeting Kevin Jordan, Director of Player Development and Sports Chaplain at UCLA. I hope you are now understanding that it's not just what we see on TV, on the field, in the weight room, in the locker room, but it's understanding the spiritual guidance that these young men and women receive from you and from the many messengers of God that are on our college campuses. Kevin, it's really a pleasure to see you, to host you. I'm looking forward to seeing you on campus and also back here at Sinai Temple. Thanks for joining us on Rabbi on the Sidelines, and we'll see you shortly. Have a great day.
Thank you for having me.